The following story is fictional and does not depict any actual person or event.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
In a hallway.
You know, if I hadn't blown my knee, I would have been.
And if I could sing, I'd be touring with Tony Orlando.
You never see me go to the hoop.
I never saw a donkey fly neither. Here, you want to shoot buckets? Go.
A janitor opens a closet.
Don't forget the soap.
He hands the other janitor a bucket, cleaning solution, and a scrub brush. He turns on the light and steps into the closet.
Hey, Magic.
He backs out as he stares downward.
You got your cell?
The other janitor holds up his cell phone.
It's not too much trouble. Give 911 a buzz, will you?
The janitors walk back into the closet. A bloody body of a woman is lying on the floor. Later.
Hey, nice of you to show.
Once, I wish the bad guys would do business at a reasonable hour.
Yeah, like you got something better to do.
Hey, I was smack in the middle of a 4-star dream.
Alone?
What, are you hosting a talk show?
Listen, the deceased is Valerie Keenan. She's 27 years old. She teaches here.
I know. There are witnesses just taking numbers, waiting to tell us exactly what happened.
See, that's the thing about dreams, Lenny. They tend to stop once you lift your lids.
They found the body over here in this janitor's closet with a whole bunch of bloody rags. Must have killed her someplace else, dumped the body here, used the rags to clean up.
Gets an A-plus for neatness. So, Dr. Brody, tell me a story.
What we got here is one very dead lady.
You went to school for that?
Made Mom proud. COD is loss of blood caused by what looks like a knife wound to the chest. Body temp tells me she's dead 6 to 12 hours.
Defensive wounds?
No, nothing under her nails either. Looks like Miss Keenan here didn't put up much of a fight.
Thanks.
Okay, so my theory on dreams dying once you wake may have just gone bust.
Huh? I didn't have any coffee yet.
Sorry, word is there's a security camera above the front door. It ain't 4 stars, but...
Let's go to the videotape.
The New York City skyline is lit up at night. Police officers work the city streets. The word law moves in front of a squad car and a man is led away in handcuffs. Detective Lenny Briscoe is wearing his tie loosened around his open shirt collar. Detective Eddie Green is at his desk. Lieutenant Anita Van Buren is shown. The word order appears in front of a courthouse and a U.S. flag waves. Scenes from a courtroom are shown. Executive Assistant D.A. Jack McCoy is leaning on his desk. Assistant D.A. Serena Sutherland is also at a desk, and D.A. Arthur Branch is in an office. Law and order. The detectives and the assistant D.A.s walk down a hallway together. Traffic crosses a bridge at night. Lenny and Eddie are watching a tape showing the two janitors entering the school.
And the last time I spent this much time in the principal's office, I left with a 2-day suspension.
I couldn't sit down for a week.
We could use a little more of that sort of discipline today, if you ask me. I'm Victor Drayson, the principal.
Your secretary said that we could.
I would have been here sooner, but the Throg's neck was particularly bitchy this morning. It's the last thing I needed today.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Miss Keenan wasn't too happy about it either.
That's not what I meant. Obviously, we're all terribly upset about this. I told the board that Big Brother would come in handy sooner or later. Security turns it on at 5 in the afternoon and off at 9 the next morning.
Well, we know when the killer didn't come in the building. The tape is clear.
Stabbed and shoved in a storage closet. I didn't think Valerie was here long enough to make those kind of enemies.
Yeah, how long does that usually take?
This is a tough New York City public high school detective, not Miss Porter's finishing school for young girls.
I think a good place to start is, did Miss Keenan have any problems?
I can't tell you much about her. This was her first semester here. Although she came with so-so recommendations, she seemed pleasant enough, did her job.
You know, it would be a big help if we could get a list of all Miss Keenan's students.
Sure.
In the meantime, we'd like to talk to some of the other teachers.
All right. Later, with a room full of teachers.
You read about it, but you never expect it to happen at your school.
We realize how difficult this must be, but we're going
to
need...
We're supposed to stare out at 60 bored eyes, knowing 2 of them belong to a cold-blooded killer.
You're convinced it was a student who killed Miss Keenan?
Well, I haven't seen too many headlines about faculty members out on shooting sprees.
Actually, a colleague was stabbed.
I'm sorry. You have to realize this is quite disconcerting.
We understand. Were any of you acquainted with Miss Keenan?
The teachers look at each other.
She just started. 9th grade English. Kids seem to like her.
I saw her wasting her time at the drama club once.
I know what you must think, but all of us, all we ever wanted to do is teach, and now we're more concerned with living through the day.
Later, outside.
You know what, I'm starting to think the school vouchers aren't such a bad idea.
Yeah, sure, why shouldn't a bunch of Bible bangers brainwash the next generation?
Man, you're just lucky your kids are grown. I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
You're lucky you don't have any. Hey, let me ask you something. If school is such a war zone, what would make Miss Keenan hang around after the bell?
Trouble at home?
Apartment of Valerie Keenan, 17 Horatio Street.
She stayed late to prepare lessons and grade exams. This place isn't exactly conducive to work.
I don't mean to get too personal, Gwen, but were you and Val...
lesbians?
Roommates, one bed?
It would have made life a whole lot easier. That couch pulls out, so she found her own place. That's a picture of Val after a truly pathetic version of a chorus line senior year.
So you two go back a while?
Sixth grade. We were going to take Broadway by storm. The babes from Bay Shore.
Do you have anything more recent?
Gwen takes a photo from a dresser drawer and hands it to Eddie.
That's this summer. Ocean Beach.
He hands it to Lenny.
Pretty girl. Was she involved with anybody?
Love's a bitch. It's a bitch and a half when you work together.
She was seeing another teacher?
At her last gig, a private school up in Milford. She and a history teacher, or Arnie something. It didn't last. Say, that photo. Do you think maybe I could get it back when you're done with it? Old time sick.
Lenny and Eddie are with medical examiner Rogers.
Notice the feet.
I'm more of a leg man, Doc.
The blood pooling tells me she was nose over toes for quite some time before being dumped onto the closet floor. I guess she was seated.
An artist admiring his masterpiece.
Or a scared kid trying to figure out what to do.
Scared kid with a bad complexion.
What, do you got a crystal ball up in here somewhere?
Something like. Here, on the hands, neck, and face. Thick cosmetic gel.
The kind used to cover pimples?
More like the kind that removes heavy-duty makeup used to cover severe skin problems.
Could this be the same heavy-duty makeup worn by, say, actor types?
It could be. Perception on the crystal ball's not 100%.
Back at the school, on a stage setting.
Never knew a dead person before. That's stupid. What I mean is, Miss Keenan, she was one of the good guys.
Was Miss Keenan the faculty advisor to the drama club?
Actually, she was new. You know, helped out here and there. But the drama club is really Mr. Bergen's little kingdom. Casting, directing, the whole deal.
Do I sense a little resentment buried under there?
Forget it. No big deal.
Fiona should have been Sally Bowles last year, hands down. Cabaret, you know, Liza in the movie.
The chorus was fine.
But girl, you deserve the lead.
Mr. Bergen thought I didn't look mature enough.
I.e., she didn't make it in the looks department. Look at her, man. The guy's got taste up his butt.
Stop, Jody.
Did Miss Keenan disagree?
Like it would have mattered to Mr. Bergen.
Do you two think he really killed her?
And why would you say that?
Here, aren't you?
Jody tends to get carried away.
What? I saw them at Starbucks together, didn't I?
Well, that proves it.
Look, if my man looks at me like Mr. Bergen looked at her, and it's going to be time for him to hit the showers.
Later, Lenny and Eddie are talking with a man outside.
You went to high school, right? Wasn't always Ms. Zoller shacking up with Mr. Leffler on the slide? Mr. Gold is banging Mrs. Kamen in the teacher's lounge before first period.
I told you.
Hormones and wild imaginations, the stuff of adolescence, the fuel that stokes the fire of gossip. Sure, I had a cup of coffee with Val, a couple of drinks here and there, but we did work together.
Yo, boss, is this going to take all day or what?
I understand you guys are just doing your job, so let me help you out. Tuesday night, I was at the ballpark.
It's Shake.
Let's go mess.
First good thing you said. It was a great game. Too bad it was rained out.
In the third inning. That's when I went to Cannon's for a couple cold ones. Go ahead. Waste your time. Check it out if you want.
Color me impressed. I had the Mets on the back end of a three-team parlay.
Hey, I love them, but don't bet them.
Cannon's Pub.
Sherry comes in, dripping wet, but orders a brandy beer back.
Alone?
It's funny how that goes. When Boz starts showing up, I figured him for a first-class fruit. You know, fancy-ass quotes, calling me barkeep. And who do you know orders Cavassier?
Then?
Then I realized that it is all for the broads. to eat up that literature crap.
It makes you wish you'd finished Moby Dick.
Makes me wish I got past Look Jane C. Dick.
Meaning Bergen brings a lot of ladies in here.
Meaning if I had half of his action, I'd double the dose of vitamin V.
Is this one of his dates?
Eddie hands the bartender the photo.
Grey Goose Gibson, extra onions. Never forget a drink. Yeah, I saw her picture in the paper. That's a shame. Another diet?
No, what's my limit? So she was in here with Bergen?
Last couple of weeks, mostly.
Did they look cozy?
Cozy? Sure, that's one way of putting it.
So it wasn't just the drama club's hormones running wild?
Well, maybe the guy has a couple of pops, starts to feel perky, heads back for a little desktop rendezvous at the school.
And what, pulls a David Copperfield to get by the security camera over the front door?
Ed, you get up in the morning, right? You shower, shave. Now, the guy on the TV with the pearly whites and the perfect hair tells you there's a good chance of rain all day long. What do?
I put on my old shoes.
Yeah, maybe grab a raincoat, an umbrella, some galoshes.
None of which I saw on the tape.
So, either the faculty and the entire student body lost faith in the morning weather guy...
Or somebody pulled a fast one with that tape.
Hello?
Later, with a technician.
It's like when your building blows a fuse. The super does his thing. Let there be light, air, heat, whatever. Problem is, he never tells the little man working the clock in the VCR.
That explains why I keep missing Sex in the City.
Exactly. You set it to record on Sunday, but what you're really getting is Saturday.
Could someone intentionally change the date?
People still have one thing over machines.
What's that?
Fingers.
Well, how about using yours to hit the fast forward button?
Lenny and Eddie watch a video monitor as the technician fast forwards through the tape. They watch as several people go out the front doors. Eddie sits and the technician slows the tape to normal speed.
Hey, there we go. Valerie Keenan, alive and well.
On the tape, Valerie opens the door.
And tonight's special guest star is...
Fiona enters wearing a raincoat. She and Valerie walk up the stairs.
Life's a cabaret, old chum.
Later, Lenny and Eddie step out of a clothing store with Fiona.
Can't this wait? If my boss sees...
It's the least of your problems right now, Fiona.
Why would I kill Miss Keenan? I mean, all she ever did was try to help me.
Okay, the fact is, Miss Keenan let you in the building at 8. 2 hours later, you leave the building alone.
Maybe someone climbed through a window.
Oh, sure, that's a possibility. All he'd need is industrial strength metal cutters to get through the bars.
Okay, I was there. But she was fine when I left, I swear.
Well, why were you there in the first place?
Miss Keenan was tutoring me for my SATs. She needed the money, and I needed the help.
Why didn't you tell us this before?
You didn't come to me right away. I thought maybe the video missed me or something. Boss said I should just stay out of it.
Boss?
Mr. Bergen. Everybody calls him that.
Why would he tell you to stay out of it?
I don't know. Ask him. Ask anyone. I would never hurt Miss Keenan.
Later with Van Buren.
Girl enters empty building. Girl exits empty building. And there's a good chance the girl's responsible for anything that happened in between.
Unless someone was already there and spent the night, unless there's another way in, shall I keep on going?
Hey, Ed, quick. What was the name of your ninth grade algebra teacher?
Mr. Heinrich.
Spanish?
Senor Sanchez.
Is there some reason for this stroll down memory lane?
Mr. Heinrich. Mr. Sanchez. Not William or Freddy.
Or Boz. When we first started talking to Fiona, it was Mr. Bergen this, Mr. Bergen that. You squeeze her a little bit. Out comes Boz.
But I thought his name was Gary.
Yeah, but to those who know and love him.
Yeah, and when he's not spending extracurricular time with the fairer members of the faculty, maybe he's picking some unripe peaches off the junior class tree.
Look, we're working homicide here. Remember, Vice is down the hall.
Yeah, and hell hath no fury like a pissed off teenage girl.
With the bartender at Cannon's Pub.
Fiona? Not that I recall.
Chuck, look at the picture, man. Might help. Third girl from the left.
I don't think so. No. I'm sorry.
Hey, what the hell did you give me?
Diet Cola, like last time.
I never ordered a diet anything in my life.
Hey, I don't forget.
Right. You don't forget. And we don't care what you served or who you served it to.
Although I happen to have the number of the people who do on speed dial.
Whoa.
Eddie holds his cell phone ready.
Yeah, she was with him. Now, normally, I card people like that, but when Boz vouches for her...
Good old Boz.
He's a regular. What am I going to do? But I swear, I don't have a clue what goes down once they're out that door.
Lenny and Eddie start to leave.
Let me ask you something. Did you keep tabs on the guys your kids spent time with? Does an alphabetized list count?
Apartment of Fiona Reed, 587 West 26th Street.
Fiona doesn't have any brothers or sisters, so I've become both her mom and her best friend. We talk about everything.
No disrespect, Mrs. Chapman, but there's some things that kids don't want mom to know. It's a fact of life. Kids get crushes on their teachers.
Of course they do. But they don't act on it.
Sometimes the decision's taken out of their hands. Sometimes it's the teachers who lack self-control.
You're saying Mr. Bergen?
He may have taken advantage of Fiona's youth.
No way. Fiona's tough enough to stand up for herself. And smart. Top 2% nationally on her PSATs. Top of her class. Besides, she already has a boyfriend.
His name wouldn't be Boz, would it?
No, it's Brian. I can get you his number if you like.
Later.
Her mom said that?
Hey, a girl tells her mother about you, you're on third, ready to slide home, right?
I guess.
You don't sound like things are too cool between you two.
She says we're cool.
Yeah, but you don't buy it 100%, huh?
I don't know what to tell you, man. Enjoy it while you got it. I mean, what the hell? Who knows how long it's gonna last, right? I told you about Darlene, right? Senior year, girl had legs up to here, body was like padau. I mean, what's she doing with a scrub like me, right?
Mine was a cheerleader.
Anyway, like an idiot, I believed her when the I can't live without you turned into, no, I'm sorry, I gotta stuck.
I gotta go shopping with the girls.
I'm spending the weekend with my sister in Jersey.
Swimming, man, what you gonna do?
You don't beat yourself up over it, kid. Sometimes a sister really is just a sister.
Later, with Serena in Van Buren's office.
We're investigating a murder. Can you explain to me why I should give a damn about how this girl did on her college boards?
Fiona claims that she went to the school the night of the murder to get SAT tutoring from the victim.
And that's incriminating because?
Because her mom says her scores were touching Ivy League.
A dead teacher, no hard evidence. Snowballs aren't the only things that roll downhill, guys. And if you haven't been reading the Post lately, there's a new DA sitting on the top of that mountain.
The girl lies about her reason for going to the school the night of the murder. She tells her boyfriend that she is booked on weekends because she needs to go visit her sister, which she doesn't have.
If you lie to one boyfriend, that usually means you got another one.
So her sex life's better than mine, so what?
So there's a good chance one of the lucky guys is her teacher, the same teacher that was sweating up the sheets with the recently departed Val Keenan.
Can we prove that?
Dump it all in a bag, give it a real good shake, and I guarantee something falls out.
I think if he's facing the threat of a 10-year sabbatical in Ossining for statutory rape, Mr. Bergen might tell us all sorts of nasty things.
What's this guy Bergen teach anyway?
English.
Good, I was afraid it was political science, you know, all that nonsense about the Bill of Rights and stuff like that. Pick him up.
What about her?
Well, first let's see what falls out of that bag.
Bergen looks through a peephole in his apartment door.
Yeah? Police, Mr. Bergen, we have a warrant. Open the door now.
Wearing only boxer shorts, Bergen opens the door.
I guess we better do this inside.
Now's not a really good time.
Lenny points toward a glass door covered with sheer curtains. A girl is putting on a shirt.
Wait, what's going on? What's this about?
Look, I'll give you a hint, bro. It ain't about cutting class.
Hint number two. Sounds like statutory rape.
Fiona is in the bedroom.
Let me guess, old Calcutta.
Boss, what's happening?
Put your clothes on. You too.
Hey, that's mine.
Yeah, I'm just gonna shake it up a little bit, see what falls out.
Lenny has a backpack.
Looks like blood.
Gary Bergen, you're under arrest for rape in the third degree.
Same goes for you, sweetheart. Only instead of rape, substitute murder.
Fiona stares at Lenny.
You ought to stop by family court sometime. It's a whole other world.
Don't even try, Jess.
A world where black letter law bends under the weight of empathy.
And that's a good thing?
If you're human.
Opposing counsel hasn't called me that in a long time.
Oh, but Jack, I know where you live.
Jack and Jess look at Bergen through the observation window.
So that's the bastard, huh?
Now that's the Jessica I remember.
In interrogation.
How great would Alexander have been if Aristotle let the class go home early? Would Tiger have 8 major trophies on his shelf if Butch called it quits after 1 bucket of balls?
You're joking, right?
Exceptional teachers keep teaching long after the bell rings, Ms. Sutherland.
Your client was running around in his underwear with his 16-year-old student.
Who was also half-naked, as I understand it.
And who's to say it wasn't school-related?
Okay. I can't take this guy. You're on your own.
With Fiona.
Okay, we both know Fiona should be tried as a juvenile, so what say we skip the hoop-de-doo, ship the case down the street, and save the long, drawn-out song and dance for another day.
Your client committed a premeditated murder, Jessica. All the hoop-de-doo notwithstanding, for that, she gets to play with the grown-ups.
She's 16, Jack. When you were 16, you were sneaking into ball games and swiping cigarettes from a local bodega.
Neither of which is a Class A felony.
And who knows where you might have ended up if you were given a nudge by a fine, upstanding citizen like Gary Bergen. The felony here is what happened to my client.
If I'm not mistaken, trace evidence of the victim's blood type was found on her backpack.
She was seduced by a grown man.
Led astray.
Forced astray would be more appropriate. I mean, for crying out loud. The child doesn't even have a driver's license yet.
I'll tell you what, Jessica, the trip to Rikers, it's on me.
It's called res ipsa loquitur, Mr. Bergen. I'm sure your attorney will explain it to you.
It's Italian hocus pocus, for they got a belly full of bupkis.
Actually, it's Latin, for two half-naked people in an apartment are probably not there to play Scrabble. And when one of said people turns out to be underage...
It's not like I was playing grab-ass with an altered boy counselor.
Shut up, Gary. Tell me, Miss Sutherland, that first romp in the back seat of your daddy's olds with little Bobby from down the block, just exactly how old were you?
To tell you the truth, nobody really wants to go to trial here.
Sure, a deal. I'm a reasonable man.
Tell me about the murder of Valerie Keenan.
Valerie Keenan's murder? I didn't...
Bergen looks at his attorney.
Is she crazy?
Look at her, Jack. I mean, do you actually think she has the capacity to murder someone all by herself?
Until she tells me something different, that's what I'm going with.
Okay. Off the record for now. You try her as a juvenile, she will tell you whatever you want to hear.
No, Jessica. I'll never turn on Boz.
I guess it's out of my hands.
Jessica watches as Jack leaves. Fiona lowers her eyes.
Tomorrow morning, 9:30, arraignment court.
Serena leaves as Bergen stares forward. Later, Arthur is reading a letter.
We try to first come, first serve, Arthur.
You believe this? They want me to speak at a dinner honoring the Chief Justice. I'm listening.
Neither one of them is giving an inch.
The SOB put me in a footnote in his last opinion, and I'm supposed to sit on the desk. A footnote, for crying out loud.
Maybe we should...
A negotiated deal between two competent attorneys is the biggest step forward in jurisprudence since the guillotine. That deserves more than a footnote, my friends. So where's the speed bump?
This girl has a bad case of the loyals. She won't implicate her lover in the murder.
And you're sure he's complicit?
I think he's knee-deep. I think Val Keenan discovered that he was having an affair with one of his students, and he persuaded Fiona to kill Keenan to save his own career and to keep himself from going to jail for a statutory rape.
Only we don't have any proof of that.
And on the opposite side of the aisle, we have...
Fiona Reed, madly in love with Bergen, finds out he's two-timing her. She kills Val Keenan out of jealousy, pure and simple, to get rid of her rival.
Arguing in the alternative. That's what makes the law so much fun.
It'll all play out before trial, Arthur.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Jack and Serena leave. Later, Jack enters his office with some takeout food.
I promise you, if we offer Bergen sexual misconduct one, a fine, no time, he's going to connect all the dots on this murder.
In other words, slap him firmly on the wrist.
Why not? The only evidence we have against him is that he got lucky with two different women.
One of whom is dead. The other underage.
She's 16.
He was her teacher. He abused his position. He violated a sacred trust.
Come on, Jack. In the pantheon of evil, what Gary Bergen did with Fiona Reed doesn't even make the top 10.
I hope you never have a daughter, Serena.
I think the problem is that you're acting like Fiona Reed is your daughter.
Never get Freudian with a man with a pickle.
Serena smiles.
You know, not to get into specifics, but I was escorted to my junior prom by a college senior. I suppose you'd lock him up.
That would depend on the specifics.
Good. Go arrest him. He's in the state senate now.
The fact is, Gary Bergen took advantage of his position...
Like Fiona had no say in the matter. She's old enough to be tried for murder as an adult, but not old enough to consent to sex. Your logic's just a tad flawed, Jack.
If you have a problem with the logic, take it up with your friend in Albany. Come in. Join us.
Jessica enters.
Have a burger.
No, thanks. I've got witnesses to prepare. Judge Taylor has agreed to hear my argument for remanding Fiona Reed's case to family court.
Jack shakes his head. Chambers of Judge Shirley Taylor.
Actually, Fiona isn't my real daughter.
So you adopted her, did you?
No. She was placed with me through a charity group at my church 18 months ago.
Fiona is sitting quietly on a couch.
She was a runaway. Living on the streets like an animal. Eating garbage. Father Joe found her. She'd been living like that for 6 months.
Did she ever tell you why she ran away, Mrs. Chapman?
Her real mom and dad, they were crack addicts in Detroit. They sent her out on the street, too.
Are you saying they prostituted their own 14-year-old daughter to make money to purchase illegal drugs?
Actually, she was 12 years old.
Jack looks down.
Thank you. No further questions.
Ms. Chapman, do you have any proof that Fiona's parents were... Never mind, strike that.
Serena looks at Jack.
Your Honor, the state drops its objection to trying the defendant as a juvenile.
I'm surprised it took you that long, Mr. McCoy. So ordered.
Later, outside the courthouse.
I don't want to hear it, Serena.
I just never thought I'd see your emotions get the better of your judgment.
It might have made a difference if I was prepared. An abused foster child.
Jack, how's an hour sound?
Perfect.
I'm sorry, I don't know how that happened, but still a perfunctory cross would have been nice.
After you've got a few more trials under your belt, you'll learn. You can't put little orphan Annie in front of a jury and expect a conviction.
Even if she flat out killed someone? Wait a second, what's happening in an hour? Are you offering her a deal?
After all, it is the greatest step forward in jurisprudence since the guillotine.
He was being facetious. Read his book.
In Jack's office.
I already told you Buzz had nothing to do with this.
Actually, if I remember correctly, you said you wouldn't implicate him. It's not the same thing, Fiona.
We've already been through this, sweetheart. I don't see Buzz lifting a finger to help you.
What difference does it make? I'm the one who killed Miss Keenan.
But would you have killed her without Buzz's encouragement?
I can help you here, Fiona. Once we get in front of a judge, it's out of my hands.
Fiona looks at Jack.
Just tell Mr. McCoy what you told me.
Fiona looks down.
He said he would lose his job if Miss Keenan said anything about us. He said we couldn't be together. I wasn't supposed to get caught. He said he would fix the video so no one would know it was me.
Jessica looks at Jack.
3 in juvie.
If she says it under oath.
Excuse me.
Serena leaves. Later, Jack is walking through a bar.
Is it safe to sit?
Serena is sitting at the bar holding a glass of wine. He sits next to her.
You know what irritates me to no end? Is how the law has become a tool to assuage society's guilt. Not my little Susie with the cute little dimples. That dirty old man must have talked her into it. Let's lock him up and throw away the key.
Fiona isn't just getting a free pass.
Okay, let's assume she's telling us the truth. She and Bergen conspired to kill Valerie Keenan. What happens now? Fiona goes and spends 3 years in a juvenile facility. Her record's expunged. She goes to college. She lives happily ever after. While Bergen, on the other hand, he gets to wear gray pajamas for the next 25 years or so. Is that the equity our courts are striving for? She held the knife.
He guided it. In the real world before, one parcels out equity when it has to parcel out culpability.
Well, that's fine, as long as culpability isn't solely based on gender or chronology.
Jack shakes his head.
I'm gonna get some sleep. Because tomorrow morning I have to explain the equities of our wonderful system to Gary Bergen.
Jack watches her leave. Later, with Bergen and his attorney.
She's gonna testify against me? You gotta stop this.
Bergen stands.
I slept with her, but that's as far as it goes.
I'm offering you, man, one.
What's that?
8 1/3 to 25.
For something I didn't do.
If we go to court on murder, too, it's going to be a lot worse. Look, I'm going to be straight with you, Mr. Bergen. Once the jury hears about the life that Fiona's lived, she becomes Goldilocks and you're the big bad wolf.
Goldilocks, right.
Bergen steps toward Serena.
I know a bartender who would disagree.
Jack and Serena are walking outside.
So poor manipulated Fiona is visiting a friend in Connecticut. They go to a bar where they know they won't get carded. The bartender gets friendly. Fiona gets coy. One thing leads to another, and she cracks him in the head with a beer bottle.
This according to a man we're charging with murder. Our search showed no priors, Serena.
That's because she convinced the bartender not to press charges, or more precisely, Bergen did. She called him. He drove up there in the middle of the night and paid the bartender $1,000.
So that doesn't mean that Fiona's lying about the murder.
That's not it, Jack. The bar where this happened is right outside of Milford, which is where Valerie Keenan taught before she moved down here. I'm wondering if there isn't a whole other side of this story that we're missing.
You can catch the next train out of Grand Central.
St. Paul's Academy Administration Office, Milford, Connecticut.
I'm sorry, this could take a while. Alumni are listed by years.
It would be during the years that Valerie Keenan taught here.
Valerie, it's a shame she left us. Reed, you say?
That's right, Fiona Reed.
Sorry, no one by that name ever matriculated at St. Paul's.
Your books. Where can I get past copies?
Later, in Jack's office.
Well, at least you got to breathe some fresh air.
I said there was no record of Fiona Reed up in Milford. I didn't say she wasn't there. Recognize anyone?
Serena shows Jack a yearbook.
It's Fiona Reed. Only back then she went by the name of Marguerite Sampson. A poor runaway, sexually abused by her Uncle John, living on the streets until the church took her in and placed her with another loving foster family. Some people by the name of Kramer.
Amazing.
You know, it's also amazing is that you're looking at her senior class photo. She graduated from St. Paul's Academy in 1998. Either this girl is some kind of prodigy or she hasn't been 16 for quite some time.
Jack furrows his brow. Later, Arthur is looking at Fiona's arrest card.
The FBI matched her prints to a Lorelei Savage arrested in Sarasota, Florida for shoplifting. She did 6 months in county and was released on parole in 1994 at the age of 18. After 1994, there's no record of her until she shows up in Connecticut as 16-year-old Marguerite Sampson, where she spent 3 years and graduated from high school.
And then turns up here with a new name and a new sob story, ready to start all over again.
Unfortunately, she ran into somebody who could blow her cover.
Valerie Keenan. 26 years old and still in high school. This girl must have some kind of weird painting hanging in her closet.
Teachers are trained to look for guns and drugs, but not whether kids are actually kids.
Then what teenager doesn't look out of place?
She made a career out of conning people.
Including my own senior staff. 3 years in juvie for murder, too. To me, it looks like she took the state of New York for the biggest ride of all. And my brain trust offers her a deal I wouldn't give my own granddaughter. Jessica Sheets is gonna love this.
Later, with Judge Taylor.
This isn't a house sale, it's a murder charge. The state will get what it bargained for. My client is ready, willing, and able to testify against Gary Bergen.
No longer good enough.
She's already been sentenced for crying out loud.
That's right, in family court. Fiona Reed has not been a juvenile for almost a decade. The family court had no jurisdiction to hear the case in the first place.
Doesn't matter. Double jeopardy, I'm sure you've heard.
Since the entire proceedings were void, she was never in any jeopardy.
The only jeopardy that's attached around here is the jeopardy you're in if you were aware of any of this the first time around.
I'm sure Miss Sheets was completely unaware of her client's deception, Your Honor.
Jessica smiles.
Fine. My clerk will instruct you as to trial date.
Your Honor, as my client will surely be prejudiced being tried jointly with Mr. Bergen, I move that we sever.
Prejudice how?
She'll be pleading not guilty by reason of mental defect. She has no idea who she is. Have your guy talk to her, Jack, and get back to me.
Jessica looks at the judge.
Your Honor?
What the hell? We'll let Bergen be someone else's problem.
Office of Dr. Emil Skoda.
Living on the streets must have been very difficult, Fiona. You might feel better if you do talk about it.
Actually, I feel better when I talk about happy things.
Such as?
My mom. I mean, Mrs. Chapman.
Fiona is standing in front of Dr. Skoda.
Do you know how long it's been since somebody loved me?
The Kramers loved you?
I don't know them.
The family you lived with up in Connecticut, they knew you as Marguerite?
You must have me confused with somebody else.
She sits.
I guess I must. Tell me, you're a junior now. Do you have plans for after you graduate?
That's a long way off.
Not really. You'll be 18 before you know it.
No.
A year and a half, Fiona. You'll have to consider college.
No, I don't. Why can't I think about now? Why must I always worry about things that might never happen?
Why won't they happen?
Because I'm...
She glances away.
Because I'm never going to be 18.
Why not?
I can't. I won't.
Jack and Serena are leaving the building with Dr. Skoda.
You're not buying this, are you?
I think she's a con artist, pure and simple. No offense.
I'm taken. Look, all I can say is for this girl, 18 appears to be the Rubicon she'll never cross.
Can you say in court that she's legally sane?
Sure, Jack.
Fine.
I thought no jury would convict little orphan Annie.
That's right. Lizzie Borden's another story.
Jack leaves.
This girl seems to have gotten under his skin.
Think?
Supreme Court, Trial Part 66.
It's called dissociative fugue. It's a type of hysteria characterized by the total obliteration of a person's identity.
Like amnesia, Dr. Carson?
It's related, but in cases such as this, the patient subconsciously assumes an entirely new personality.
And the cause of this dissociative fugue is what, Doctor?
Simply, it's the patient's attempt to escape intolerable conflict.
A conflict born at an early age.
That would be correct.
Jessica nods to Dr. Carson and the jury.
Now, Doctor, about this Lorelei Savage...
Objection. My client's name is Fiona Reed.
Because that's what she calls herself today?
You'll address me, Counselor. For the sake of expediency, we'll go with the name on the indictment. Objection is sustained.
Okay, Doctor. You said the defendant, because of some unresolved conflict...
Actually, I said intolerable conflicts.
You say tomato,
objection?
I
said... Mr. McCoy.
Withdrawn. In any case, this girl is playing at being someone else. Isn't that true?
It's hardly playing, Mr. McCoy. Fiona has assumed another personality at the expense of her own.
And what personality would that be? The one that was raped by her uncle when she was 12 years old? Or the one that was the daughter of crack addicts and sent out to sell her body at the same age?
I couldn't say.
Is that because there's no proof that any of that ever happened? Let me ask you this, Doctor. Why is it that she always adopts the persona of a teenager? After all, she is 26 years old. Wouldn't it be more fun to be an astronaut or a race car driver?
Objection. Badgering.
No, I'd like to answer that question. Fiona consistently returns to an adolescent state because youth is her safety net, so to speak. It enables her to belong to a family that loves and cares for her.
It enables her to avoid growing up or taking responsibility for her life or going out into the world to earn a living.
No, Mr. McCoy. It shields her from any kind of legitimate adult interaction. Or at least that's my preliminary diagnosis. You see, typically, a perpetual identity crisis such as this is the patient's way of negating the real sexual abuse she suffered as a child.
Jack stares at the doctor. He goes back to his seat as the jury watches.
When's your birthday, Fiona?
May 16th, 1986.
That's interesting, because the prosecutor, Mr. McCoy, has presented fingerprint evidence that indicates you are a 26-year-old woman named Lorelei Savage.
Well, there has to be a mistake.
Why do you say that?
Because I'm Fiona Reed.
Of course you are.
Fiona looks down.
Tell me about your boyfriend.
Brian. He's a sweetie. My friends think he's a little geeky, but we get along okay.
How intimate were you with Brian?
If you're talking about sex, no. Brian and I haven't had sex. When we're old enough, when we're ready, maybe it'll happen.
When you're 18?
Jack looks at Serena. Fiona looks down.
When I'm ready.
Jessica nods to the jury and goes to her chair.
But you were ready to have sex with your teacher, Mr. Bergen, isn't that true?
He forced me.
Jack approaches the stand.
And you were ready to kill Valerie Keenan because she could expose you for the fraud that you are.
Objection.
That's it, Counselor. You'll control yourself or you'll see sanctions.
He forced me.
Jack takes a step forward and stops as he stares at Fiona. She looks down.
Your Honor, I'd like to continue my cross tomorrow, if that's possible.
And I assume we'll all come back with cooler heads. Court is recessed until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Fiona remains seated on the stand. Jack walks over to Serena.
I want to know the penalty for simple assault in Connecticut.
Later, the attorneys are in a conference room with Mrs. Chapman, Bergen, and Fiona.
In the interest of full disclosure, you should know that we've dropped all charges against Gary Bergen.
I know all about the incident in Connecticut, if that's where you're going.
Good, that'll save us time. What confuses me, Mr. Bergen, is that if the bartender actually pressed charges, as a first-time offender, Fiona would have drawn a suspended sentence with a $250 fine. Yet you chose to pay the bartender $1,000 to make it all go away. To me, that seems an odd choice, considering a teacher's salary.
Fiona insisted. She told me that a criminal record would hurt her chances of getting into a good college.
Sure, that is one possibility. Another is that Fiona was scared.
Well, of course she was scared.
Scared that the parole board down in Florida might issue a warrant for her arrest if her fingerprints ever happened to hit the system. That would put a quick end to your game, wouldn't it?
Fiona stares blankly at Jack.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's right, I forgot you're insane.
All right, I think we are done here.
So insane that you went to Milford, Connecticut. So insane that when you were carded in that bar in Milford, you used your old Marguerite Sampson driver's license. Pretty strange. Wouldn't you say? Considering you testified you never heard of her.
Jessica sits. Fiona smirks and glances away.
You're good.
Jessica stares at Fiona.
Fiona?
But you see, Mr. McCoy, what I'm good at, what my special talent is to make people see what they want to see. It's carried me this far in life. I doubt it'll let me down with 12 people unable to avoid jury duty.
Mrs. Chapman listens. Jessica slowly turns toward Jack.
Without an attorney, it might. Fact is, unlike you, your lawyer is bound by a code of ethics. She can't knowingly let you lie on the stand, nor can she lie to the jury in her closing.
You think I need her to win? The jury already sees me as a poor, abused, abandoned child. All they're concerned about, all they really hope for, is to save my soul.
Until Mr. Bergen takes the stand.
Him? As far as they're concerned, he's a child molester. Who's gonna believe him?
What about me, Fiona?
Mrs. Chapman and Fiona stare at each other.
They'll believe me.
How could you?
Fiona looks at Mrs. Chapman. And lowers her eyes. Serena glances around the table. Mrs. Chapman frowns as she and Jack watch Fiona. Later, Jack and Serena are leaving his office.
8 1/3 to 25, it's plenty of time for her to think about who she really is.
Well, how does the story go? When you leave Shangri-La, you immediately turn old and gray.
Somehow I think Fiona Reed's going to figure a way around that. So being 16 forever, that wouldn't be so bad.
That must have been one hell of a prom night.